Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Addiction casts shadows over all family members that dominate the way they think, feel, and perceive themselves and interact with others throughout a lifetime. Children raised in such an environment can develop low self-esteem, distrust, attention-seeking behaviors, cynicism, intolerance, and hopelessness. However, with proper guidance, the dysfunctional family can be restored to optimum health and healing for all family members. My guest today, Evelyn Lighty, has 35 years of experience in the mental health and addiction fields. A professional counselor and author, Evelyn has written a manual to help struggling families find their way back to healthy, loving relationships. In her book, A Fix for the Family Rift Caused by Addiction, Evelyn explains how the consequences of addictive behaviors can be addressed and treated. Her compassionate approach to and understanding of the dynamics of relationships under these difficult circumstances provides a path out of the dark tunnel of addiction and points victims to the light of a healthy, fulfilling life. Good morning and welcome to the show, Evelyn.
Good morning, Patty.
And good morning, and it's a joy to have you here, Evelyn. It's been a couple of years since you were on the show, and we talked about some different topics then, so I'm glad that we're able to focus on this topic today in light of your new book that you have out. Tell us what motivated you to write A Fix for the Family Rift Caused by Addiction.
There are a lot of books for addicts, and there are many books for codependents, but there are not many books for family members after someone has gone to treatment and has realized that they have a problem with addiction. Sometimes they come home to a family that's totally clueless, and just because they got treatment doesn't mean that they've suddenly learned how to be a good parent. So the whole purpose of this book is to fill in the gap there, to give them an opportunity to look at their parenting skills. And now that I'm sober, now that I'm not addicted to drugs or food or sex, now what do I do with my kids?
Very good. So it sounds like you kind of found an area that hadn't been touched on a whole lot, Evelyn. And it kind of reminds me, if I can make a parallel, of the person who becomes a Christian and believes that everything is going to be wonderful in their life from that day forward, and it isn't necessarily. And here you're talking about people that they have worked on their problem and they have identified their problem and they have been through treatment, but that doesn't mean that life is going to be 100% wonderful after that, because there's a lot of issues to be dealt with.
Absolutely. You're right on.
Well, I'm curious to know, Evelyn, and I've kind of experienced this with some situations in my own family. Do you believe it is therapeutic for an adult child to confront their parents about the mistakes that the child believes the parent made in raising them?
Only under certain circumstances. As a counselor, what I recommend people do is they first write it all out. Look at it for themselves, have a counselor who will help them deal with whatever happened to them as children, and then only if they can go to a parent with forgiveness in their hearts and understanding that the parent probably didn't deliberately mess them up, only then is it therapeutic to talk to the parents.
Well, that makes absolute sense. I know there are some children who are kind of in a I'm going to get back at you mindset, because
yes,
they think, well, I can blame my parents because I'm this way and I'm that way, and I'm just going to go tell them that it's their fault that I don't ever go get a job, or it's their fault that I'm an addict, or it's their fault that I don't make good decisions. There comes a time when a person has to take responsibility for their own behaviors, no matter what their background is.
Absolutely, but along with that, they have to look at what happened to them. because a lot of new research is out now, and one of the things that is coming out in the research is that trauma changes the brain of a child.
Oh, absolutely.
While you can't necessarily blame the parent, and it's not about blame, it's about, okay, this is what happened. This is what I'm dealing with. And sometimes if you really want to have a relationship with a parent, it's therapeutic to say, I love you, I forgive you, and this is what I'm dealing with. And other times I have parents who send their adult children to me and pay the bill because they realize that they didn't know how to parent. Mm-hmm. And there's not blame in there. It's just a realization. It's reality.
Well, it sounds like those people must have some really good insight to be able to do that.
Some parents do. I mean, maybe it takes their children being adult before they can realize it. But a lot of parents do realize that they screwed up, and it wasn't necessarily through any fault of their own. They just,
yeah,
you know, that's how they were raised.
I say that pretty much the premise of your book, Evelyn, the end of addictive behavior does not mean the end of problems in family dynamics. Can you talk a little bit about why that is true? And I'm sure, yeah, I know you talk about this throughout your book, so.
Yeah, that's true because an addict and a person, a codependent, they're totally self-centered as much as they don't want to admit that and they don't want to deal with that. But when you have two people completely focused on a drug or an addiction or a behavior, that kind of leaves the children out in the cold. And just because you realize, oh, I have a problem, I have an addiction, I am codependent and I need help, does not mean that suddenly you know how to parent your children, because here you've got maybe 1, 2, 3, 4 kids looking at you like, yeah, I don't believe this. You've told so many lies and manipulated so much that how am I going to ever believe anything you say? So they have to not only deal with their own recovery, they have to prove themselves to be responsible parents. And that's not easy. That's really difficult.
So how can a person that's raised in an abusive or a neglectful environment prevent him or herself from exhibiting those same negative parenting behaviors toward their own children? Because I've heard that it's a kind of a, I don't want to say hereditary, but you're going to parent the way you were parented most of the time. So how
Absolutely.
Do you break that cycle?
First of all, you recognize the cycle. A lot of parents are in complete denial. They don't want to recognize it. They have no realization of what actually happened to them. They're just carrying on from where they, I mean, so you grew up and your family believes in physical punishment, spanking. So
yes.
Then you go on and you spank your children. And there are a lot of parents that I know who they really want to do better and they want to do it different, but they don't know how. And
mm-hmm.
those parents need to go to parenting classes. They need to get into some kind of 12-step group. They need to do whatever they need to do to build up their own self-esteem and their own behavior so that they can treat their children differently. Well, there's a lot of parents that are afraid to spank their kids for fear they'll never stop. There are parents who have so much anger inside of them that they are afraid that if they lift their hand to their children, they will never stop.
Yeah, I can remember my mom giving me a spanking or two, that's for sure. And I don't think I'm any of the worse
mm-hmm.
for it. But I do
yeah.
know that with my mom, there were some issues of psychological abuse more than physical.
Right.
The thing
and that's
she would
almost
say
worse.
That, yeah. I mean, I look back and I think, geez, and I was always scared of doing that with my kids. I was very careful about, for example, to me, one of the most negative things that you can do to your kid when you and your spouse are having issues or problems. the worst thing you can do is go to your kid and say, well, your dad feels this way and he's wrong, or your dad's no good, or that kind of thing, to me is just
absolutely
inexcusable, in my opinion. Yeah.
It is. Yes, it is. You should never include your children in your disagreements with your spouse. Never.
Exactly, because you should not be pulling your children into that adult world yet. They're not ready.
By the same token, you could make a child feel crazy if he sensed that there was trouble between you and your spouse and you denied it.
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
So the middle of the road is, to be honest, yes, there is trouble. However, we can handle it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You don't have to give them the particulars of what's going on, and you don't have to ask their opinion, and you don't have to expect them to help you come up with a solution.
Absolutely. You're so right on, Patty.
Mm-hmm. How can a child, especially today, Evelyn, when things are a lot, in my opinion anyway, a lot more lenient with children than they were back in the day when I was growing up. There are
absolutely
certain things that a parent just absolutely can't do today without winding up in court and that kind of thing. But there's also other things like, let's take teenagers, taking their phone away for a week. You know, to them, they see that as extremely abusive behavior. But seriously, how can a child determine the difference between a parent who exercises appropriate disciplinary measures and a parent who has crossed the line into abuse?
Well, for the most part, children can't determine that. Whatever is normal for you is your normal. So if your parent has been abusive since the time you were small, you see that as normal and you don't see that as abusive. On the other hand, if a parent loses it and it's kind of out of the blue and something else is going on, a child can recognize that a parent is under stress or having a bad day, and it would be fundamental for the parent to say, I'm sorry, I was having a bad day. It's not about you. It's about me. But there's people who deny to the death that they've been abused, and they've been horribly abused.
Yes. Yeah, I know. Well, I'm thinking of a television show, and it takes place way back in the day, in the 1800s. Okay. And this young boy has been whipped by his dad for failing to watch the stock like he was supposed to, and a wolf comes in and kills one of the sheep. And some of the characters in the story say, well, there's nothing wrong with that. How you're supposed to discipline your child. And then there's the other character who says, no, this is absolutely wrong. And I think we have to, we as parents kind of have to know where that standard is. I mean, if you have a child who does something that they shouldn't have done, and the consequence, like I say, is taking the phone away for a week, to them, that's absolutely devastating. But if you have a parent who says, you're never going to see your friends again, and you're never going to have that phone back, and you're never going to be able to do this and that and the other, and I'm going to have you under my thumb every second, to me, that is kind of and I'm asking you, is that kind of a psychological abuse thing where it's way above and beyond?
Yes, that is psychological abuse. And a lot of parents just get carried away because they're angry and they have a lot of stress in their lives, and it has nothing to do with the child, but the child's there and they take it out on them.
I think a part of it too, Evelyn, from my own experience raising two kids, is part fear. Oh, I don't want anything to happen to this child. I don't want my kids when they grew up, they used to joke with me that when they were first learning to ride their bicycles, and I live on a county highway. We live on a county highway out here. And they always joke about how they were teenagers before I would let them ride those bikes past our picket fence out there. I don't think I was that bad, but you know, I mean, I was terrified. I mean, the first time I let them ride a mile down the road to the to where the cemetery is, it was like, wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess I was overprotective. There's that's another good question. What's the difference between overprotectiveness and abusive behavior?
I think, well, overprotective can get to be abusive, but I think the thing is for the parent to own it.
Yeah.
I used to say to my child when he got his driver's license, if it was up to me, I would keep you in the house wrapped in cotton batting.
Yep.
It's not up to me, so I'll just pray for you as you drive off. But
yeah.
I was terrified to have him driving for the first time.
Of course. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean because I went through it with my two kids and now my only grandkid, my granddaughter, got her license here last year. And although I know she's a safe driver, still there's always that fear of not even so much what they're going to do, what the other guy's going to do.
Uh-huh. There's just that. And it's, you know, it's also a fear of letting go.
Sure.
Suddenly your baby is, you know, starting to lead their own life. And that's disconcerting for a parent. And it also creates a lot of fear.
Exactly. Evelyn, what kind of destructive life lessons do children learn? And I brought this up a little bit in the introduction, but I will let you expand on it. When they are raised in a home where instability in the form of abuse or even mental illness exists?
Well, children learn to live with guilt and shame. And they also learn to lie, cheat, and steal. And they do it because that's what they have to do to survive. A lot of children, they watch their parents, and their parents are not setting a great example for them in terms of lying. Like my mother used to answer the phone, for example, and she would say, oh, I'm sorry, he's not home, and my dad be sitting right there. One of the things she would say is, oh, I hope we don't have any company this weekend because we used to have so much family drop in all the time. And then my aunt would call and say that they were coming for the weekend. I mean, maybe minutes after she told me that.
Right.
And she'd answer them and she would say, oh, we'll be so happy to see you. Oh, that's wonderful. And I used to listen to her and I used to think, what? Why don't you just tell her you're busy?
Mm-hmm.
But she never would. And I tell you what, I lied a lot before I got into recovery. It was just a way of life. I didn't think anything of it.
Sure.
You say whatever you have to say.
Talk about some of the other things that I mentioned in the beginning, such as, where did I mention it here? How some kids that are raised in this environment become very cynical. They become... they use a lot of attention-seeking behaviors and these kinds of things. Intolerance, hopelessness.
Well, yeah. Children do what they have to do to survive or what they feel like they have to do to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is no adults that are able to guide them, for example, in my house, my dad was a alcoholic. My mother was a flaming codependent. I didn't have grandparents. I didn't really have anyone to say, you're okay, Evelyn. I think that the child does become cynical. I know I certainly did. Can't believe anything anybody tells you. And you're not a good judge of character. That, I think, is one of the hardest things. That people who grow up in a dysfunctional home can't judge who is an honest, trustworthy person and who isn't. And so you end up trusting a lot of the wrong people. And the more you trust the wrong people, the more you get abused. And then the more you get abused, the more cynical you are. And it just, it's a roller coaster.
It's a vicious cycle. Yeah.
It
and
is.
Also, how many times have you heard someone say, how can so-and-so have grown up in an alcoholic home and turn around and marry one?
Absolutely, I did that. Because
and
it's
normal,
you don't really know.
Exactly. That's the normal that they grew up with, and that's the normal that they're used to. Evelyn, we're going to take a short break here. I like to make listeners aware of who they're listening to.
Okay.
So this morning we are listening to you. You listeners are listening to Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. I'm honored to have Evelyn Lighty here with me today. Evelyn has 35 years of experience in the mental health and addiction fields, and she has written a book that helps families. It's called A Fix for the Family Rift Caused by Addiction. So she has written this book to help families overcome after there has been an acknowledgement of a problem, overcome all of the issues that are left over from that. We've been talking to this point about how families are affected by addiction and what the consequences are for children and the ways that maybe children can be affected by this type of a home environment. Evelyn has a website. She also has a Facebook page and a Twitter account, and I'm going to refer you to my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com, all one word. And there you will find a link to this show. It is on archive, so you can listen to it at your convenience. You can also refer it to friends and family, which, of course, we would love to have you do. But if you go to PattiSheen.com, you will see the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page, and there you will find, click on that, you'll find Evelyn's show, you'll find all the shows that we have recorded to date. For Evelyn's show, you go to a little tab that it says more shows, I believe is what it says, or more shows, more information, and there you will find links to Evelyn's website and social media. Evelyn has also written this book. She's written a couple of books, actually, and I will put links to purchase those books on there as well. So, once again, that's Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. And like I said, the show is on archive, so listen to it at your leisure. So, Evelyn, we've been talking about all these different things, and you mentioned in the answer to your last question, you mentioned shame and guilt. Share with us what the difference is between the two.
Guilt is about what I do. If I do something and it is wrong or it is lying, cheating, or stealing, then I have a right to feel guilty, and I must feel guilty in order to recover. However, most children feel guilty about things they have no control over. It's like I planned a picnic and it rained and it's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Or I asked my mom to do this and it didn't work out and that's my fault. So most children feel guilty over things that they do are not responsible for. And they have to learn to feel guilty for the things that they are responsible for that shouldn't be done, like lying, cheating, or stealing. However, shame is about who I am. And who I am, if I'm a child of an addict, is worthless. Worth less than other people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ashamed of, and a lot of this isn't really totally acknowledged, except in the loss of self-esteem and the loss of feelings of worth. If my parents aren't taking care of me properly, then I'm pretty sure that I'm not worth much. If I go to school and the teacher abuses me, and sometimes teachers will because I'm acting like a brat, then
yeah.
I feel worth less than the other kids. And by the time I'm 10 years old, I'm totally worthless, and I carry that for the rest of my life unless I get into counseling or some kind of recovery.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So I'm thinking guilt more on an adult level. I wasn't there the day my father died, type of thing. And it's my fault because I wasn't there.
And so there's a lot of
Now I'm trying to think of a shame thing that would go with that. But I understand what you're saying.
Well,
I'm ashamed because my father is a town alcoholic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And how do we overcome those things, Evelyn?
Well, first of all, we have to realize that we're not responsible for other people's behavior, no matter what. We cannot make somebody do something, and we have to accept that reality. And that takes care of a lot of guilt. Then a lot of shame is taken care of by the same thing, by recognizing my dad drank. That's not on me. That's on him.
Mm-hmm.
And my shame doesn't belong to me. And I need to deal with it. And most people, they really need a recovery program, a group, or an individual counselor to deal with deep-seated shame and guilt.
Okay. Yeah, so that's
I personally had Virginia Satir in my life, and she was absolutely amazing, wonderful counselor.
In your book, Evelyn, you say that self-esteem, boundary setting, detachment, and tough love go hand in hand. Would you explain the relationship between those four elements?
Well, if you have self-esteem, then you have the ability to set boundaries. And setting boundaries means this is my space and you can't come in it,
mm-hmm.
either emotionally or physically. I'm sorry, my phone was beeping. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I hope
no.
It didn't come on your phone. Okay, so then if you have self-esteem, you can set boundaries. And it will not cause you a lot of guilt to say, no, thank you, I don't want to go to that movie tonight. Or no, thank you, I'm doing something else. Or no, I'm not going to loan you money. If you have detachment, you can watch people you love find their own way without with love and not trying to fix them or make them somebody
dominate
else.
Dominate their life.
Right. You can still love them, and you can compliment them on their great behavior and detach from their bad behavior and let them figure it out. It doesn't mean you don't set boundaries or that you don't tell them what they're doing if it hurts you. You just don't take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have tough love, you realize that sometimes bailing someone out is the worst thing you can do for them.
Yes.
I had so many parents bail out their drug-addicted children.
Mm-hmm.
They're just right there to pay their fines and bail them out, loan them money, and they have no clue about they're just making their children's addiction worse, not better.
Exactly, yeah. And that's so hard to do, to step back.
I know. But they all stem, everything stems from self-esteem. That's why that's first.
And that makes perfect sense.
If you don't have self-esteem, then you have to start looking at yourself. And, I mean, you can ask yourself really a simple question. Am I going to like myself if I do this or not? It's a very simple question, and most of us have the answer inside of us.
It's kind of interesting because I had a phone conversation with my sister before you and I started to do this show, and we talked about this very thing, the whole boundary setting thing with friends, where someone expects a certain amount of your time or expects something from you, and why do you feel that obligation to give into that when you're really thinking, oh man, I'd really rather stay home this evening and watch TV or whatever. And I'm getting better about that.
Yes.
I'm getting a lot better about claiming my own time.
Right. It's hard to say no sometimes, but it's really important to be able to do that and set boundaries.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're probably familiar with Townsend and Cloud's boundaries book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a friend of mine actually taught a class on that with the DVD and all at our church, and that taught me a lot about when you tell a friend, no, I can't go to this movie tonight, you're not rejecting that friend or that friendship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You are making claim on your boundary, your time, your whatever.
Absolutely. Patty, I've just finished writing two more books. And writing is a very solitary endeavor.
Yes, it is.
And I have people who think that because I'm home, I'm available.
Mm-hmm.
And they will call. And I've had to be really firm. Like, no, I'm writing.
I'm working right now.
No,
yeah.
I can't do this. And then some of them even come to my house and knock on the door because they're not. To a lot of people, writing is just a pastime. It's not not a business or anything. It's
a
just
hobby.
Something you can. Yeah. And so I've really had to be tough on this summer. I've just finished those two books, and I've had to be so tough with this. And it's hard.
Yes, it is. It is very difficult when you work from home. Throughout your book, in several different places in your book, you mentioned the 12-step recovery programs, which you must see them as extremely important in treatment. So would you explain what makes them a successful approach to treatment?
I personally don't believe that someone can actually recover from an addiction in a healthy way if they don't do the 12 steps. And that's just my personal belief. A lot of people can quit using or drinking or whatever they're doing and stay dry.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're living a sober, healthy lifestyle.
Right.
So there are people who would argue with me about this, but that's their personal belief. This is mine. And the thing that is so powerful about the 12 steps is they're taken completely from the Bible. A lot of people don't know that, but if you are a student of the Bible, you can find the 12 steps in the New Testament everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly in those words, but exactly in a way that, for example, the first step is we admitted we were powerless. And powerless is, when you're an alcoholic, is powerless over alcohol. And that your lives are unmanageable, but it might be I'm powerless over my child. I am powerless over my husband. I am powerless
mm-hmm.
over my spending addiction. I am powerless over my food addiction. And because of this, my life is unmanageable. That means I better do something about
mm-hmm.
it. And the best thing to do about it, in my opinion, is to, first of all, surrender to it. And then when you surrender to it, the next thing is to believe that there is a power greater than you that can restore you to sanity. And that power, in my opinion, is God.
Yes.
And without the 12 steps and without God, I would not be where I am. I would not be probably sober. I would probably be dead.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, these are really important.
Yeah, and I do apologize. We probably should have brought this up sooner because that's one of the main premises of this show is how has God helped you from darkness back to light, or how do you help others find God to help them from darkness back to light? So we probably should have addressed this sooner because we hadn't even brought up the subject of God or spirituality or anything throughout the show, although we did discuss some very important topics. So that's fine. But without God, all of us are powerless. And that first step that says I am powerless, it also goes without saying I am powerless over my sin without God.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, most
so
definitely.
So there is no way, to me, there is no way to be in a healthy recovery without the 12 steps.
Well, you did mention that you have two more books out. So give us a little bit of a rundown on that?
Well, they're not out yet. They're not out yet.
Okay.
But they're coming out. They will be out before Christmas, at least one of them. And what they are is a trilogy about my life. And
Like a memoir?
Yes, only it's more like a historical thing. I grew up at a time when we didn't have electricity, we didn't have running water, we didn't have, and I lived on a farm with a outhouse and kerosene lights and horses. And so I wrote about that, and I was going to stop there, but then my editor encouraged me to keep going. So it turns out that one book is going to turn into three.
Nice. And well, good for you. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Well, thank you. It's been hard. It's really hard looking at your life when you're old.
Oh, I know. I think my problem would be my retention. My kids aren't that old yet, and I have to ask them, did we do this? Did we do that? Yeah, Mom. Well, gee, I don't remember it.
Well,
I don't know how people can go back and remember their life story like that.
For one thing, I feel like it's a mandate from God that I do this. And I've always felt like my recovery is a mandate. And that's why I've worked so hard to share it.
Yes.
Is because I have felt that mandate. But for another thing, God blessed me with a photographic memory.
Oh, that
so
must be nice.
I can actually see everything I'm writing. I actually see it. I don't just remember it, but I see it. And because I see it, I can describe it.
What a gift that
is,
huh?
I didn't really realize that not everybody could do that. I didn't know that. And when people would say...
Yeah, I'd be most excited to read those books when they come out, Evelyn.
I'll let you know when they're available. Right now, we're getting them in shape.
Very good.
Really good talking to you, Patty.
Well, it's good talking to you too,
insightful.
Evelyn. I always enjoy visiting with you, and I was going to ask you, we are getting to the end of our time, but we still have some time left. So is there anything else you would like to talk about that you're thinking, oh, if only she had asked me this question?
Well, I do want to say that I do have a nonprofit, and it is a Center for Training and Restoration, and that on my website, EvelynLighty.com, all one word, there is a place where you can order my books from Amazon, and it's an Amazon Smile program, and they will make a donation to my nonprofit to everybody who orders through my website. So it's only a few cents, but it adds up.
Well, sure. Yeah, what do they call that? Amazon Smile, huh? Okay.
The Amazon Smile program.
Okay. Yeah. I've
and
heard
on
of that.
The Amazon Smile program, yeah. And they, I mean, even if you don't order through, if you order through my website, it automatically goes to my nonprofit.
Okay.
But if you order through Amazon and you put in Amazon Smile, they'll ask you what nonprofit you want to support.
Yes. And you're on there.
And I am on there, and I certainly would appreciate support because we do a lot of things. One thing we do is give free literature away.
Nice.
There are people who can't afford the books that I write, and we give those away to people through that nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah, and I'd like to mention to listeners also that this is not the first time Evelyn has been on the show. She was on the show back in June of 2017. And at that time, I believe we discussed your services quite a bit, Evelyn. So I will also put the link to that show on the website.
Thank you, Patty.
I mean, even though it's on there, it's listed on there. I'll also list it underneath this show so that people can go directly to it without having to search for it. So, we'll be sure and do that.
Thank you so much.
You are more than welcome. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Evelyn. I'm glad that we connected again, and it has been a pure delight to spend some time with you this morning. even though it was just over the airwaves. I'd love to see you in person again one of these days. Maybe that'll work out.
I would love that too, Patty. Maybe we can work that out.
No, that would be great. Yep. I guess that's all we have for today then. And once again, thank you and God bless you in your ministry, Evelyn. And I'm sure that the things that you have had to offer in this show will be a definite asset to people who do listen to it, who deal with these issues. So thank you again.
Thank you, Patty. And Patty, one other thing, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure.
Put that I will answer personal emails or personal messages on Facebook.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me write that out real quick so I don't forget, because I have such a terrible memory. Will answer personal Facebook messages. Okay. Very good, Evelyn. Thank you. And thank you for offering that to listeners.
Thank you, Patty. It's been great.
It has been. It's been a delight. Listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. It was a pleasure having you with us listening today. And we hope that you'll be back next time we do a show. And may God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul. Some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites